All right, we will get moving. I call the meeting of the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance to order. Representative Shemansky moves the minutes of February 24th. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. The members, today we're going to pick up where we left off on our budget discussions on the pesticide division. If you remember, we are just starting to get into the spreadsheet, and there's another change item or two to be addressed. And then what we're going to do is move into a discussion on the Clean Water Fund proposal. There's three or four of those out there recommended to come from the new 3/8 of a cent by the governor into the Department for Activities, and we will review and try and understand what's going on with that. So who's ever coming, come on down. We have Mr. Bezicki and Ms. Cheney moving. Reminder, there's coffee up front. If anyone wants a cup, help yourself. That's for anyone in the room. And remember to shut your cell phones off or risk a penalty of $1 in the coffee can, including the chair. Welcome to the committee, and I'm going to ask you, if you can, to tell us, you know, we have a spreadsheet here, and I assume you have it. I see we're getting a fact sheet here, and if you can reference budget book pages as we're going through this, too, to try and get committee members on board easily.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the record. My name is Greg Bezicki. I'm the director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. I appreciate the opportunity to continue with the budget presentation. And as you said, the staff is handing out a fact sheet that I didn't quite get to last week. I could go over this relatively quickly and then get into the spreadsheet and some of the more detail,
okay,
if you'd like. This initiative can be found on your budget book on page 20. It's called the Agricultural Pesticide Dealer License in the budget book. The fact sheet actually is entitled Cross-Border Sales. They're one and the same. Very simply, and I believe some of the testifiers last week alluded to this in their presentation, very, very simply, registrants are required to pay the fees for the registration of their pesticides in the state of Minnesota, and it's based on the annual gross sales. The pesticide dealers in the agricultural sector have been raising to the department that pesticides that are being sold via a broker or perhaps over the internet or even at brick and mortar facilities across the state lines, selling into Minnesota may or may not be paying, well, they're concerned that they're not paying all the registration fees. Frequently this call is generically referred to as they're not paying the ACRA fees. So you may have heard some of this in your district. We're, as I said last week, proposing an increase to the pesticide fees on the annual gross sales, so that would exacerbate this issue. One of the thoughts we had was, perhaps we could follow the Michigan model, which is to require that a new pesticide dealer license would be required for those individuals, those persons selling pesticides into the state, whether they're restricted use or general use, if they're agricultural pesticides. Currently, pesticide dealers in the state of Minnesota are licensed if they sell restricted use pesticides, not general. Most of them, in fact, actually sell both. But this new license would attempt to capture those people selling into the state and requiring them to submit, maintain sales information for sales of pesticides in Minnesota and report that back to the registrar. This would allow us to ensure that all the pesticides that are being sold for use in the state, whether they're by Minnesota dealers or whether they're by dealers in neighboring states or in the internet or over the internet, are in fact paying their fees. And we would require that an agent be named in the state of Minnesota so that we would have someone we could deal with directly.
So, question, just point of information, and maybe other members have questions too. I bet you 10 cents I can go to the internet today and buy a gallon of Roundup that's listed for agriculture use and not pay any tax, and it's not a licensed dealer. What do you do with that? How do you police that now? How do we police that? I mean, it looks like you're trying to get at that, but I can't believe someone shipping a gallon of Roundup from Massachusetts would pay a fee to the Department of Agriculture. And what recourse do you have if they don't?
Well, Mr. Chair, especially if they're coming from the east, we would really like them to be paying the fees. This is a personal bias. The way the statute reads right now, it is the registrant's responsibility, regardless of how those pesticides are sold, whether they're by a broker or whether they're by a Minnesota dealer or a South Dakota dealer. The registrants have informed us that it's very difficult to police that, and so they may or may not be getting the information. So while those sales may in fact be taking place, our statutory responsibility is to make sure that the registrant is accounting for that sale. And that, as I said, the registrants say, especially with the internet sales and some of the distribution as it's gotten more complex, that's very difficult to do.
Well, that's difficult. How about a fixed dealership just on the other side of the border? Someone in Fargo selling over into Minnesota, are they typically licensed now? Do they understand Minnesota law? Are you able with reciprocity agreements to track records in their plant and vice versa, North Dakota track in Minnesota plants?
Mr. Chair, yes, they are licensed. Generally, the border facilities are licensed. We actually send in our inspectors over into those states. We notify the states that we're going to be doing this, but we have authority to inspect their records. And so we actually have gone in past years to facilities just across the border to figure out what they're selling and make sure that those sales are legal and understand what is being sold in Minnesota and what is being sold in the neighboring states.
So who do you suspect will buy this new license?
Mr. Chair, we anticipate that there will be some brick-and-mortar facilities in neighboring states that may not be fully aware of this, so we would have an opportunity to do that, to publicize that, and we'd also be trying to reach the internet sales and the brokers that are selling via the internet. We would be able to take enforcement action against them. I would say it is significantly more difficult to take enforcement action against facilities that are outside of the state of Minnesota, but it certainly is possible.
So is that really what this is more about, is having something on the books to say you are required to be licensed, Minnesota has a license that's available to you in Massachusetts, as you sell in here, you didn't do it, and is that more what it is than actually trying to license and collect money from folks?
That's correct. It's more to ensure that there's a level playing field. That's what we're trying to achieve. The industry has raised the issue that it still doesn't resolve the issue that the distribution chain is complex on products. And we understand that is a difficulty, but at least this way we would be making a step in that direction.
All right. Representative Hamlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What enforcement action can be taken? What are the steps when it comes to enforcement action?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, we would conduct an investigation, gather the evidence, determine, in fact, if there was a violation that had taken place. We do that in the field, as you're well aware of, but we also do it on paper issues and records and so forth. And then we would send them an enforcement notice, basically informing them that informing a facility in another state, well, let's say Massachusetts, that they are out of compliance. First, we let them know and try to get them in compliance. So that would be probably the first step, is to make sure that they were aware of it. If they didn't come into compliance, we would gather the information, send them an enforcement notice, which basically would be here's the evidence that we have. If you dispute this, let us know. Otherwise, we're assigning an administrative penalty to you. If you don't pay the administrative penalty, then we would take this to court.
Proceed. Reverend Solberg, our ex officio member. Members, for those of you that are new, Representative Solberg and Representative Carlson are ex officio members of all the finance committees, and every once in a while they like to pop in, and especially on the Ag Committee. They think it's the coolest finance committee here, so they like to come down. So.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
Okay. Just a question on the, as it relates to Internet sales. Do you see Internet sales on this type of product of being active?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, yes, we do know that there are Internet sales taking place. The industry has informed us that their observation is the same, and that's actually increasing. We still believe that the vast majority of agricultural pesticides are sold from via brick and mortar stores because they provide the service and the follow-up. A number of growers have been found themselves in situations where they purchased the product, had some kind of a problem with the product, and really had nowhere to go except perhaps an internet sales broker, and they wouldn't receive satisfaction.
So, Mr. Chair, just follow-up. Do you see most of the internet sales being done in small quantities, such as home and garden use?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I would think, and I don't have facts, but my understanding is that the significant portion of the internet sales actually comes in some of the ultra-low volume that's used on farms.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked the question is I have submitted a bill based on the New York Supreme Court decision that talks about nexus, and it really says that if there's any kind of a presence at all in the state, not just a bricks and mortar presence, but if just even an employee or even a part-time employee, that would require then the person who's doing the selling to include sales tax. So it's a really a protection for our small business people. But my interest is piqued on also then the fees that are associated with that in another state. And we may want to have some conversation on that to see if we could, that they should also be paying the pesticide fee as well.
There certainly is labeling and license fees for all pesticides. And I think Mr. Bozicki's right. Agriculture, you know, we used to buy 30-gallon drums or at least buy the gallon or 5-gallon pails, and now we're buying small bags of product that are very intensely active ingredient-wise and very easy to ship through the mail and the UPS, and we don't need a big truck pulling into the yard anymore. So that's the problem we probably have. Representative Faust, now I understand the cattle growers are here, and I get their hats, but I am trying to understand your hat today.
Well, I'll last night I slipped on the ice and cut the top of my head open, and so rather than show everyone all the blood and guts, I just thought I'd wear a hat.
Well, we're glad to know you're all right and you're here.
I lived through it, but it was nip and tuck for
very
a while.
Very good. Represent Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, life is good, you know, so that's good. So anyway, my question actually comes from your comments, and that, you know, having been in the farm chemical business for many years, I understand, you know, there are chemicals that are labeled in one state and not another, and even different areas of certain states. And when people are buying those online, whose responsibility is it to make sure that they're not selling them into somebody that's going to use them in the wrong area? Does that responsibility ultimately fall to the farmer to make sure that he is following the label? Or do the registers, the manufacturers, or the dealers have some responsibility there as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, excellent question. The ultimate responsibility is assumed by the applicator, by the user. So it would not be illegal to sell to a grower, even if the grower could not use it for bigger soil conditions, for example, in that particular area. So the ultimate responsibility is the user, whether it's an applicator or it is a grower. But obviously, if a grower is ordering an applicator to apply, and this is the product, that person may have some responsibility as well. And as a matter of fact, what we've seen over time, especially in recent years, is an increased responsibility on the shoulders of the registrants, the dealers, the associations, the growers, the farm organizations, to be more knowledgeable and to handle their products in a safer fashion and in a more responsible fashion. And we want to encourage that, but that's generally what we've been seeing.
And just to finish this up, I assume that our retailers and others would be supportive of this. You haven't heard anyone coming in banging their fist against it in your office?
Mr. Chair, generally, yes, that's the case. There are people in the industry that are not sure that this is going to resolve everything, and I know that there are discussions among the industry members as to other options, and we'll be talking with those folks at the appropriate time.
Dave? Moving on.
All right. Mr. Chair, I can do this however you would like. Our budget page is page 31. So this is the budget activity summary of the division. I can take you through this briefly if you would like, although it does contain a great deal of the similar information that I talked about last week, or is in the spreadsheet, the VBS spreadsheet that you would like us to work off of, however you would like. Mr. Chair.
Members, the spreadsheet is in your packets. It's the one that's horizontally laid out. And so it's 9 pages long. Again, a lot more detail than what's in the book. But if you just want to walk through, just briefly, the spreadsheet with us would be helpful.
Okay, the budget activity.
Does everyone have it?
Okay.
Pages?
We've got vertical ones. We have 2 vertical ones.
2 verticals. What do you got? Do you have one that says, let's see here.
Mr. Chair, in the upper left-hand corner, you would see pesticide and fertilizer management several times in the agency component.
Yeah, that
children with pesticide exposure.
Okay, yours is up and down, not horizontal. That's the same one. And it's too small to read. The one I have has bigger print. So let me know. We'll get the pages. Get some copies made for them. If the chair and the staff can't read it, we should have bigger copies, and I don't think the chair or the staff could read that. So why don't you go through your budget page in the book while we're getting that done, and we'll look at it a little bit when the copies get back.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to do that. And for the benefit of the members, page 31 is a overview of our fiscal information, our budget information, and on the following page is a brief description, on the previous 2 pages there's a brief narrative description of the division. Actually, 3 pages, I guess. In my book, it may be 2 in yours. So I will work off of page 31, and across the top you see the FY08, 09, and then the governor's recommendations and a biennium column across the top. The first row is the general fund, and you'll see that in 2008 we had $2.254 million, and in 09, 10, and 11 that number is in the 700,000 range. The reason for the decrease there is that in 08, the Clean Water Legacy research money was being routed through our division. That is no longer because of the constitutional amendment, and the legacy money is actually a change level that Assistant Commissioner Joe Martin will be talking about a little bit later, and it's found lower in the document.
Excuse me a minute. I just want to introduce over here the folks that came in are the 11th and 12th grade students, right? From Faith Christian School. Doesn't say what town. What town are you guys from?
Princeton.
Princeton.
Faith Christian School from Princeton, Minnesota. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government. Tour and educational program. We've seen these groups before, but we just want to welcome you. This is the committee that is, it's Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. So basically we oversee about $400 million worth of budgets for veterans and agriculture in the state, and we're going through some agriculture budgets today. So it is kind of like watching paint dry, but we look at your dollars that you all pay and your folks pay as taxpayers, and we try and understand how they're being used. So I just wanted to mention that. Welcome to our committee, and you can continue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I hope that wasn't a comment on how
well
I'm doing.
Well, there's no pictures today, and I already told Ms. Cheney that. This group likes pictures, you know, and so Joe Martin's here with clean water stuff. There's no pictures. Think of the pictures you could have with clean water and the beautiful Minnesota landscapes and other things. Nothing here. And so we're trying to encourage you to get into the 21st century and use some multimedia in these committees. But no, it's no reflection on you at all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did have pictures last time.
I know you
and,
did.
And I thought they worked very well, except for the buzzing in the audio system,
right,
that we had to overcome. But next time, pictures, Mr. Chair.
Okay,
not for sure. Continuing down the page, then the next row is the remediation fund. This is Superfund money. This is money that the Department of Agriculture and the Pollution Control Agency utilize for the management of Superfund sites. This $388,000 amount is used to support 3.5 staff that provide the evaluation, the scoring, and the oversight of ag chem incidents and Superfund projects.
And as we don't have the spreadsheets, there's no change in the staffing level in this division that maintains. If you're not changing money amounts, I assume you're not changing staff, and I assume that you're. How do you calculate then changes in healthcare costs or benefit packages? Even if pay was frozen, there'd probably be an increase needed there. So,
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and that is part of what I was presenting last week, in that there's a general overall ebbing of the resources that we have available to us. We do not have an increase in the general fund, but as the members are well aware of, overall there are decreases in the general fund in the department and in other departments as well. So in our particular division, we did not sustain any decreases. It's not in the governor's recommendation to decrease the general fund. Likewise, there is no increase or decrease in the remediation fund. So the way that we actually handle it at the division level is we use this money and we stretch it as far as we can go. When we start running out, we may have a vacancy that we will have unfilled. And using all of the funds tied together, currently right now I have I think about 5.5 vacancies in the division. That is part of what the fertilizer increase would be to fund some of those vacancies. And Mr. Chair, when we get into some of the detail, I'm prepared to talk about the FTEs.
Okay.
So
the sheets are coming now.
Do a quick overview here.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members, the next area is the Clean Water Fund, and as I said, Mr. Martin will be speaking about that. At the bottom third of the page, you see lines under the expenditures by fund of direct appropriations. There is an increase in 2009 and 2010, you'll notice. That is actually the expenditures that are anticipated in the research, the legacy money that is being distributed for ongoing research at this time. The remediation fund, I had just mentioned, that's the Superfund money. And there you see the clean water, which shows zeros in 08 and zeros in 0 and 09, but it shows an increase in 10 and 11. The statutory appropriations,
are the main fund there is the agricultural fund. That is the $8 million to $9 million increase from 08 to 09. That is the pesticide and fertilizer money from our division. It also has dedicated accounts from other divisions. So the agricultural fund is the overall fund that's used at the department. The reason for the increase between 08 and 09 basically is carryover. That is unspent money that was available or but not utilized. ACRA would be an example of that, where funds were not utilized, and that rolls over into the second year of the biennium. It's anticipated that not all of that money will be spent. The increase to $11 million in Canon 11 is a result of the fee increases that we presented last week. The next line is the federal funds. I mentioned that last week as well. We do get some money from EPA and from USDA to conduct some activities. That shows an increase in 10 and 11. Mr. Chair and members, we do increase more. We plan and ask for more dollars. We don't always get those dollars. So what we show here is how much that we are at.
And on the federal fund question, are any of those funds requiring state matches to get them? And if so, do those matches come out of general fund or ag fund, or if you could just, or are they just general grants you apply for every year from the USDA or somewhere else?
There's quite a variety, Mr. Chair. There's our EPA grant, which gives us that we work with the Office of Pesticide Programs with the state lead agency on pesticide regulations, so that is delegated to us. We work with them, and we do provide a state match on those dollars. Actually, depending upon the program, whether it's in education or whether it's in enforcement, that match may vary. We also do a small amount of work with USDA. I believe we have about a 10% match on that. And then depending upon grants that we receive, 319 grants, other soft money, there may be a match or there may not at all.
And the match can be any fund that we have, general fund or ag fund or remediation funds or wherever we can drive the dollars?
Mr. Chair, generally we use the most appropriate fund for the EPA pesticide programs. We use our pesticide dollars. We would not use our fertilizer dollars because those are dedicated. So we try to use our dedicated funds to the greatest extent that we can and not use our general fund unless necessary.
All right.
Mr. Chair, then moving down beneath the federal line, you'll see a remediation fund. That fund deals with we have two types of remediation fund dollars that come to us. One is for administrative costs. That's the $388,000 that I mentioned earlier. We also have four Superfund sites. And we reserve a certain amount of money in the remediation fund for potential spending in those areas. Also, if we do have some kind of an emergency, we can declare an emergency and access that fund. So you will see in 2008 that we actually spent $941,000. Most of that money was actually spent on cleanup on a pentachlorophenol site up by Sandstone. We have actually reserved $2.3 million so that with that money is available should we need to actually assume the responsibility for the cleanup. Generally what we do is we reserve that money, we keep it in advance, and we have the responsible party proceed with the cleanup. But we have money to step in case the responsible party does not proceed. Mr. Chairman, that goes through the expenditures by fund. The only other category we have at the bottom is the expenditure by category, which is basically compensation, operating costs, and then we do not have in FY08 or FY09 anything in terms of local assistance, but in the governor's recommendation with the Clean Water Legacy, there would be. So the compensation
dollars are listed there, and the other operating expenses. And as I explained in last week's presentation, there's a lot of dollars that we pass through for cleanup, or as I just explained, with EPA reserve money.
All right, Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is backed up on the remediation fund. If you don't use that, if they do come up with the money on their own, so you don't need to use yours, you just have that much money carried forward for next year then, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, that's correct. Both agencies have equal access to that. The Pollution Control Agency actually has 90% of the Superfund sites and does most of the work. We're a smaller but equal partner. If that money is not used, it remains in that remediation fund, and then each year both agencies get together and negotiate or declare how much work that we're going to be potentially needing, and we basically reserve that in case we need it to buy it.
Representative Fowles.
Yeah, I also am interested in total compensation. The full-time equivalent stays about the same at 50.1 each year, yet the total compensation goes up by $2.5 million. I'm sure that Quinn Cheney got a big raise, but I doubt it was that much. Where is all of that extra money going?
Mr. Bezicki. Mr. Chair, this came up last week, and I know Mr. Ernst had a chance to take a look at it, and he provided me with some information. And I don't know if he would like to present this, but I can give it a try. My understanding is that our full-time equivalents, and I'll get to this in a moment, are in the 70s, and they stay about the same. They go up about two, if I'm not mistaken, the out years. I know I've got the email here in my packet. I just didn't write it down. So there was some somehow in printing off this report, the numbers were not printing correctly. But in a VBS inquiry that Mr. Ernst did, the numbers came out correctly. So he was trying to find out from the Department of Finance why this was happening, and if it was happening, we know it's happening in all of our agency budget or a lot of other places. I'm not sure it's happening in other departments. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, in a moment I'll get the numbers. Our numbers actually go up a little bit. They stay about the same, but they go up a little bit. So, yes. Mr. Chair, in 2009, we have 74.5 full-time equivalents. In 10 and 11, we would go up to 76.8. And I believe we have 5.7 vacancies at this time, unfilled vacancies.
Okay. Representative Falk and then Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How is it that you're able to keep adding more people, given that we kind of have a hiring freeze on or looking at doing that?
So I think the governor signed the executive order on hiring other than essential employees last December or something. Have you added staff, I guess, is the question, since then? And if so, who and why?
Mr. Chair, we actually have had, recently, we've lost five positions, so we're carrying five positions. The only position that we currently have, we've added two positions within, I would say, the last 5 or 6 months. One position was to replace the person who does our training of pesticide applicators around the state and conduct all the workshops. We had a retirement there, and so we were able to hire an individual there, and I'll explain how in a moment. And then we also have an unclassified employee, which is a temporary employee, who is helping us with a very major data request and dealing with some of our data retention. The way that we can proceed with that, with hiring, even under the hiring freeze, is if we can make the case that this is a critical position and that we need to have it, and then we can't fill it with some other resource. It requires a tremendous amount of justification that goes all the way up to the commissioner's office.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, for the Clean Water Fund, I think 4 years ago we had appropriation to the Clean Water Fund, and I know there were lots of vacancies in the Department of Ag and other agencies, and I think that the Clean Water Fund at the time was used for lots of backfilling of positions in that. It doesn't show up in the 08 or 09 fiscal year, but I think it was the previous fiscal year. I'd just like to have some numbers on that, if you can, how the clean water, if they were used in this particular program or within the Department of Agriculture itself. And then my other question is, going forward, are you confident that the clean water will come into this agency from that particular fund, or so there's another process that's in place for those particular funds as well?
Kind of melding into a clean water talk, so I'm bringing Mr. Martin down. That's his topic today. So maybe you can start with Representative Colbert's question, and we'll see where we go from there.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Joe Martin, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture. In terms of past clean water legacy appropriations for one time, there was an appropriation for $400,000 for general technical assistance, which money that was eligible for staff costs. We were very conservative in using that money for staff. We reassigned only one staff member to work on impaired waters, and to this point we have encumbered $265,000 to pay for staff costs since the inception of Clean Water Legacy. So just one person.
Just to follow up, so that was indeed a two bienniums ago, is that correct? And did you have the ability in that legislation to carry it forward?
Mr. Mark. Mr. Chair, yes and yes.
So, Mr. Chair, so your number here of zero in the Clean Water Fund then is, since it may have been a zero appropriation, but your expenditures in 08 and 09 is not zero and zero from that particular fund. Is that correct? The legacy fund.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. There is some carryover from past Clean Water Legacy Fund. If you'll find a handout in your packet that's it's titled Past MDA Effort Clean Water Legacy, and it's prepared 22409, you'll find more specific numbers of how we've used past dollars.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Yep. Before we release Mr. Bozicki, a couple comments, members. As you're looking at these budgets, and I know some of you are new to the committee, what you're going to see is the department for the biennium has about $170 million budget, and about half of that is general fund. The rest is all ag funds, fees, and other things that we collect in the department. So it's a unique department in that way, our budget here. Similar to Veterans Affairs, frankly, when we look at the veterans' homes, as you learned yesterday, we pay about 57%, and the rest of the money comes from federal or other areas. So while our budgets are about $400 million in this division, about half of that is general fund, and the rest is all outside federal fees, ag funds, other things. So it's a kind of a uniqueness over here. I think that probably would be similar to what you see in the DNR and PCA areas also. So. I just have the spreadsheets, members, you have now go into a little more detail from what you just saw on the single sheet. You can certainly look them over. And I'm just going to ask a general question on page 3, Mr. Bozicki, of the spreadsheet. Sometimes the only questions I ever have are when the anomalies show up. And on the bottom there, under the pesticide regulatory account, under other operating costs, I see you bounce in 09 up to a $962,000, and then in 10 you go down to a $3,000. And it did bounce before that, too. So what is that other operating cost, and what's causing that blip in the screen there?
Mr. Chair, we're looking at some of the increase in the waste pesticide account, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe that's where we're looking at other options. No, Mr. Chair, that would be
It's not really under a change item.
Mr. Chair, that is the, I believe that is the money that we budgeted, not as a result of the waste pesticide going forward, but as a result of what we're doing this year. And I believe that's where it was put into 2MO. Mr. Chair, if you look in, we had a discussion about this, if you look in the out year that was actually put into 2DO, that's the 871.
Okay.
So the 962 is the change, the budget that, the money that we put in as a result of the legislation that was passed last year, so that we can handle the collections that we're currently undertaking.
So you've just shifted the reporting form. Okay, I got you.
Yep, that's true.
All right. Representative Fulcom and Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get to this question before Mr. Bezicki left. The increase in the fees for the pesticides, can you explain the rationale? Because I look at it that there's fewer farmers currently farming, and so there should be basically less people required to process those. Can you explain why we're seeing a need for increased funding when the total number of applicants served is actually decreasing?
And I will tell you, just maybe you can answer this too. Since we had you in last week, obviously you've been talking to pesticide folks, manufacturers and distributors and others. Remember, there's a change item in the department in this arena, and they're asking for an increase in the origination fee or the labeling fee up to $250, I believe. I don't have it. I can't remember what page we're on here. But then they're proposing for the non-ag to collect a fee based on sales into the future, or volume of sales or pounds of sales, whatever they do there. We have had people come in, the non-ag people, and again, this can be stuff you find under your kitchen sink that's not agriculture in your home. They have come in, and they're questioning that on the basis that this would be one of the first in the country states to collect monies that way, which is similar to the way we collect the ag pesticides, but it's the other side of the equation that are concerned. So what this committee is going to have to decide is, do we go ahead with that type of a mechanism for fee increases, or perhaps they'd be more satisfied with a larger increase in that labeling fee that would cover your costs, and we have to understand what that is, and if that is a better way to go than setting a new path on volume of sales in the future. But I just wanted to lay that as a groundwork, and you can answer Representative Falk beyond that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you are correct in that there is a overall improvement on how pesticides are handled, but in agriculture, I would be the first to state that. But what we also have seen is a tremendous increase in the concern and the activities that's being required of a state regulatory agency. We have issues that we're dealing with now, such as TMDL, endocrine disruptors, impacts of pesticides at very low levels on children's health, a tremendous number of very technical issues, requirement or a request for increased services, whether it's misuse investigations or increased sampling of our waters and our groundwaters. As I mentioned last week, there's a very good write-up, and I presented this in the committee before. This is the Legislative Auditor's Report in 2006. It describes our division very well in what we do with pesticides, and I think it does an excellent job of stating what these emerging issues are that need to be addressed. We have not had a major registration fee increase in 19 years. So we're basically saying these are the tasks that are put in front of us, these are the requirements, whether it's through the Data Practices Act or because people need to understand what kind of pesticides are moving in the stream. We have this work to do, and in order to do that, we need additional resources. The last comment I would say is, and we'll be developing this information. It's actually, there's a nice write-up in here. Only about 14% of the pesticides that are registered for use in terms of products are agriculture. All the remainder are other things, home and garden, industrial, sanitizers, all types of situations. The actual amount that's sold probably is pretty close in terms of dollars, about 50-50. So there's an awful lot of pesticide issues in urban areas and in homes. Very frequently we get called in. One of our biggest concerns is chlorine poisoning by pool chemicals, which result in evacuations. We deal with those frequently. So there's all kinds of issues that aren't just agriculture, I guess, but there's a tremendous need, and that's what we're here to present to the committee. These are the things that the legislature has asked us to do or we're proposing to do, and these are the dollars. And if we don't have the dollars, we'll actually have to cut our program back.
Now, just to clarify one statement you made, and I like the statement, but I know you haven't had a fee increase since 1991, but that doesn't mean your dollars collected haven't increased since then. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I believe I presented a line. It was a picture.
When you say that, it sounds like, I mean, to the casual observer, that you're not having any more money into that fund, but because of volumes and licensed products and other things, you have seen an increase under that 91 fee level in dollars.
There, Mr. Chair, that's correct. There has been a gradual increase in that fee over time. Of course, our costs have increased, so that has maybe kept us equal on the cost of living. In terms of the response or the request to do more work, such as the waste pesticides, we're going to have to do an awful lot more. And I also I'd want to be very clear. I'm just talking about the registration.
Right.
We actually have increased and decreased various applicator license fees during that period of time as well. So there has been some changes.
Right. And again, the basic premise of all these fees and all the chemicals and what we're trying to accomplish in here with these fees, and particularly with the waste pesticide collection, some of you might be hearing some pushback from some of your counties, but with the new laws we have in place, and we'll firm them up this year if we have to too, we're asking every county to record every drop of pesticide that comes in, whether it's household hazardous waste or agriculture, so we can start getting an idea. Is agriculture paying more for the household stuff now? You know, the ready-to-use, the water that we spray. I mean, a lot of what we're collecting is water, but we still have to dispose of it like any other hazardous waste. And these fees then in the future will be reflective on how much product is being put into the system by the industrial folks, by the home and garden folks, versus the agriculture folks. I suspect, Representative Falk, and I'm just guessing, that we'll see a decrease and the amounts of money charged to ag folks in the future because their product levels are decreasing and we're probably collecting less over time. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is what really are the outcomes here? Because you alluded to the having to deal with things like chlorine spills. Is that, I mean, I understand the Department of Agriculture oversees pesticides, but is that really maybe the best use of those resources where they could be better applied to serving the agricultural community? I mean, how do we know if accounting has been done? You know, how do you do an inspection? I mean, how do we know that this money, which is an agriculture budget, is being used really for agricultural purposes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, I would simply say the pesticide regulation audit report reviewed our program for 10 months and did a very complete both fiscal and programmatic review, and the bottom line is they said we're doing a good job, but there's some areas that we could do a better job. So I would ask that you take a look at that for a very complete view
I'm here to answer your questions, and I'd be happy to go over at another time of how we're using the dollars. That's been one of the things that I, as a manager, have been challenged with for years, is how to use our dollars more efficiently, especially in light of some of the things that I said to show the committee last week. Our rent has gone up. Our costs for employees have gone up. We basically have less resources and more to do. One of the issues I mentioned last week is we have responsibilities under the data practices. So without any more resources, we have to spend a significant amount of time just managing those data requests, and we're managing our way through it. But that reduces, that's an activity that perhaps we hadn't been doing as well as we could have been. But if we're going to devote time to it, that's going to take away from other things. So, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd be happy to talk in detail.
Mr. Bazzia, there might be some confusion, again, that some members who are new to this, but, you know, the Ag Fund isn't just agriculture. They label 1,300 different pesticides in the state, and they're the agency responsible for the pesticide law. And whether it's agriculture or industrial, like the chlorine in the pools, they have the people, and they're the ones that over. It's not PCA, it's not DNR, it's Department of Agriculture. So even though we call it an ag fund, it's used for beyond ag uses because they oversee a lot of things in there and collect monies from those people too. So,
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and maybe I missed the question there, but I believe there's 5 or 6 dedicated accounts. We're talking about the pesticide regulatory accounts, but that go into the ag fund, and call that. Because it deals with not only my division, but other divisions as well. It's an agency-level fund.
All right. What we're going to do is move on to Mr. Martin now to explain. There's been a request from the governor for some $9 or $10 million in clean water monies, new monies that will be realized here starting in July. And what we want to understand, Mr. Martin, is what they're going to be used for. Certainly, the folks we represent wonder if you are utilizing them in current programs or this new use and other things. Well, there's a visual aid now. We have water sitting on the desk. It's clean water, right? That's beautiful. Now you're thinking outside the box. We like that. Mr. Martin, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself again for the tape, will you?
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Joe Martin, Service Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I want to thank Ms. Cheney for the visual aid. This is the goal.
Okay.
What I referenced earlier, I prepared a handout that maybe will describe this past efforts and future efforts a little bit in a more straightforward manner rather than looking at the budget sheets.
Okay. And you could, as we go to reference where those sheets are, staff, if you can help us. I know you're following along intently, and you could probably just tell me right away where those pages are, can't you? He could, but he's not going to right now. Okay.
I'll just say that, you know, thanks again for the opportunity. This is sort of the first hearing we've had in terms of the Department of Ag portion of the Clean Water Fund. I'm sure as many of you sit on environment committees and other committees are hearing more pieces of this from other agencies. And we'll also be touching on this afternoon, I believe, in ag policy. To sort of sum it up, I think we need to look at what we've done in the past to sort of how it fits into going into the future. If you look at our past efforts of Clean Water Legacy, it was 2 separate appropriations. One for fiscal year 2007 and one in fiscal year 2008 and 2009. With those past appropriations, there was basically 3 roles that the Department of Agriculture played in Clean Water Legacy. The first and most substantial was Ag BMT loans. And you'll see in that handout a brief overview of how those dollars were spent and how that program functioned. The second main piece is research. And basically in terms of research, I know that people go, well, what is the value of research in terms of impaired water? I think we all accept that there are considerable knowledge gaps about what exactly agriculture's contribution is to a certain impaired water, specific impaired water. We know that agriculture is a contributor, but it's hard to quantify.
And when we know that we've found the problem, it's even a harder issue to find out what DMTs you need to place and where you need to place them to actually improve the water quality. So we've initiated several research projects with the University of Minnesota, and I believe also in your packet there's a handout that has more specific information and updates on those research projects. The third piece that we've been involved with is a general technical assistance effort. And as was referenced earlier, we have reassigned one staff member who's been overseeing these research projects, has been scientifically evaluating some of the TMDL plans and the monitoring to basically trying to extrapolate and refine what agriculture's contribution and what DMTs we need to place on the ground. Two other projects we conducted were working with the Minnesota milk producers and the pork producers in terms of developing private sector environmental quality assurance programs. There's been a lot of discussion about what role can the private sector play in working with livestock producers to improve their environmental stewardship. And then the last project was really an issue about trained professionals in the field, also private, whether private sector or public sector, to work directly with producers in terms of conservation planning. So we worked with University of Minnesota Water Resource Center and putting training programs together to get those people on the ground.
And members, as he's visiting with us, if you want to read on your own too, it's on starting on page 11 of the budget book to page 15. And also, you have a more detailed spreadsheet. It's your other one in the packet. It's a 4-page total sheet. And on the bottom of page 2, you see CW, pesticide monitoring, CW, drinking water, CW. All the CWs there, and onto the last page are clean water activities shown in more of a spreadsheet, what limited spreadsheet we have for that change item. And I just want to point that out to members. Sometimes they like to read beyond what you're doing as you're doing it.
Mr. Chair, that's a good transition. That concludes my comment on the path. Do you want to move to the change items, or are we going to take questions on path work?
No, why don't you move into, you have a nice sheet here actually listing them. I assume you want to move into that. You've got $4.5 million coming to the loan program, et cetera, pilot projects, 2.6, et cetera. If you can maybe go into those now and tell us, what funding they're supplementing, or what are we doing new, or what's going on with those.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. The first Ag DMT loan program, it does not appear on your budget sheet because that is a budget item within our development division, so that's within a different division, but all the other items, I believe, show up in the budget sheet. And thank you for the question in terms of supplements and supplant. That's been a question that I know many legislators are very watching very closely and very concerned about. And in terms of, I'll just start with the Ag DMT loan program. You can read what the program does, but in terms of the funding for that program, it was a program started in 1995. It's been funded either by the legislature through special appropriations or through an annual amount that the Public Facilities Authority provides. I can tell you that the level of funding has been stable from the PFA on the Ag DMT loan program. All dollars that we've received into this program via Clean Water Legacy has been a supplement. We've targeted the funds into watersheds that have approved TMDL plans, and it's in addition to the base allocation that counties would be receiving, and that would be the plan going into the future.
Are you still receiving PFA monies in the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are.
How much?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's $1.5 million.
Per year or in the biennium?
For the year, but there's opportunities to come back and receive additional money from PFA.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the goal of getting those dollars out from the constitutional amendment is to get projects on the ground that are going to actually lead to conservation of our soil and cleaning our water. So what do you anticipate will be the allocation out of the $4.5 million to staff? since as I read this, it says that the dollars will be going out to our local government, and if it's going out to our local government through some sort of grant process or your current process, are you going to require additional staff, or can you do this with the existing staff that you have?
Before you answer that, the pages, it feels like they turned on the air conditioning back here. I don't know if there's any way to adjust that. All of a sudden there's a fan blowing, but Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, we've tried to keep our staff costs down in this category. We're very conservative. We know when these dollars are allocated to departments that the expectation is that it's going out to counties. I believe that we can, with our existing staff, implement this program, but at the very most, if we may add one person for this, which would be in general FTE is around $100,000.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if we move forward on this, I would really like to see something in writing that will state how many staff that you will hire in order to implement and put in the ground these dollars. I think we really need to make sure that there's accountability with how the dollars are spent, and when people come back to ask us, we need to be able to show them what the proposal, initial proposal was, and then how those dollars were actually spent, and have follow-up. And so I would request that if we are to fund this, that our committee is given specific numbers of how these dollars are to be used, the outcomes that you expect, how you're going to measure those, and then we'll follow up and get the results.
And that's a good request, and you can provide that. You know, on page 3 here of the spreadsheet, it just shows it all as loans and advances, but I suspect there is some overhead that'll be needed and other things, and we'd like to see that. And again, like Representative Welty said, the more detail, the better, particularly around the clean water monies. But that's true on any change item. We want to understand what the spreadsheet looks like. So if you could provide that. If there is one FTE, that's fine. We need to understand that to get that money out during the year. Whatever it is, we need to understand what those expenses are. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair and sir, on page 11, this is a revolving loan fund, and I see it's capitalized right now at about $57 million. How much is the income each year from the prepayment of the loans?
Mr. Mark, or Mr. Ernst, or anyone that can answer that.
Mr. Chair, I apologize, I don't have that information with me, but I'll be happy to get it to you.
But Mr. Chairman, I think that it's a revolving loan fund, and we need to know also how much is actually
coming
in the fund.
In the next
and also things such as interest rates and if there's any defaults on them.
Mr. Chair, I believe the interest rate right now to the actual individual is around 3%. And the default rate has been very low.
Does RFA administer these?
Mr. Chair, this is not administered by the RFA.
And why not? I mean, we have the Rural Finance Agency does most of our loans and revolving funds and other things. Why would this be separate from their department?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. We have an individual, but the program was historically housed in the Ag Development Division. The Ag Finance Division actually just recently merged with that division. In terms of the administration, it's a relatively easily administered program because the work primarily takes place at the local level between the local government unit and the local lender. What our primary responsibility is deciding what the allocation is to each county or each LGU. Okay.
Well, let's think about that. Why we wouldn't have that show up going forward in the RFA division and have them administer. I just think it's cleaner to have all our loans and everything in one group under Mr. Boerboom over there than.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to take that.
We could visit on that as we go forward. I think the committee is interested in maybe combining, and if there's some cost savings realized, that'd even be better. But
absolutely. All right. Mr. Chair, the second piece you see is a general, there's a lot of different things, I guess you could say, that this request could be used for. There would be some staff costs associated with this. This would be also eligible for general research that you've seen them done in the past, that may be RFP research academic institutions. Also available for grants for maybe some unique pilot projects or demonstration farms. And as you see, the request there is $2.625 million for the biennium. I know there isn't a lot of details here. I think there's a lot of ideas in terms of what could be done with this. And we didn't come forward with details at this time on purpose because we wanted to foster a discussion on what are the best uses in terms of this request.
Is that showing up? Do you have this spreadsheet? Do you have a spreadsheet?
Probably not, Mr. Chair.
Get him a spreadsheet, someone. I think it's showing up on the bottom of the spreadsheet. If it is, I want to know that's true. And we do show full-time of 200,000. I assume that's a couple, two or three staff at 200,000. And then onto the back page 3, you're showing an equipment of 300,000. Curious what that equipment might be. Then we've got, looks like, some research grants or other things, higher education. First of all, I guess, is that what we're talking about here? And if so, then can you go into a little detail on those line items, what they are for?
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I do have the budget in front of me. This was really a first attempt at looking at what exactly the $2.625 million would be spent on, and you are correct in terms of the full-time, that would represent potential staff costs in terms of technical assistance. And the grants to higher ed, that would be money that would be set aside for official RFPs for academic institutions or other institutions to compete for. And the grants to non-government units would be projects that pilot projects or demonstration sites or other unique cooperative endeavors that we may look for. In the equipment line, I'm not certain on that. That may be a set aside, say, if there was a pilot project of purchasing monitoring equipment.
Let's check that out. Let us know what that equipment's for. We don't want to suppose it's for something maybe in the future. You know, we should have an idea of what we're doing with the money because we're appropriating it this year. So I don't like just setting pots of money around and wondering if we'll use them for what. So nothing, and I don't think you do either. I think you want to know what it's used for.
Mr. Chair, and we're very open for discussion and input in terms of best use of these dollars.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the technical assistance research and pilot projects and demonstration site proposal that you have, you know, one thought that just came to my mind was, what if we were to take that 2.625 and write that into the Ag Special and direct the university to do some research, since they already do some research in this area. But if we didn't do that, I would like to see numbers as to the administrative costs currently to the Department of Agriculture to administer, if you do provide funding, and it sounded as though you said that you did, to universities for research. If you could give us an idea of how much you spend in administrative costs to administer those current dollars, that would be helpful in knowing, if we go down this road, how much of the funding is going to be put into administration rather than into direct research.
To your first question, I'd prefer the money stay in our budget, number one, on parochial, but number two, that I think we have a better idea. We can direct it better towards direct ag research. Once it goes to university, even in the ag special, you know, we kind of lose track of it. And I think we have better oversight here on the smaller RFPs. That's certainly something we can talk about. I guess my question, following up with Representative Welty, and again, back to the request for employees, again, 200,000, if that's 3 or 2.5 or 3.5 or whatever it is, FTEs. Do you anticipate that's new hires, or is that people that will be moving over from some other area now or some other budget into that you already have within the department?
Mr. Chair, the plan would, as I mentioned earlier, we do have one person assigned to work on this right now to keep them working on specifically impaired waters issues, and at the most to add two additional.
So where do those two additional come? When you say add, now are you moving someone from a department that maybe a project is sunsetting, or and their responsibilities will shift here, or are they new hires? Will you be posting for the next 2 years for this budget if it's approved?
Mr. Chair, that determination hasn't been made, but it may be either.
Well, again, that's the questions we want answered more specifically, and Representative Wilsey was alluding to too. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying, you know, but if we are taking this money and backing it into the department to make up for general fund cuts that we saw on the other end of the budget, we want to understand that. And we are concerned about jobs. So I want to preserve as many jobs as I can in the department and around the state, in your agencies and others, because if they're unemployed, they're costing us more. But we do need to understand this particular fund. In particular, what's happening with it. So, and I think that's what Wealthy was getting at, and he's right on the mark. Any other questions? Okay, move on.
Mr. Chair, the last two items you see in the request, these would be new areas that we haven't, we weren't using Clean Water Legacy money in the past for these efforts. And the first one you see is drinking water protection. And the amendment language actually calls for a certain percentage to be spent on drinking water protection. And this is the department's role, as we feel, would be best utilized in dedicating to working on nitrate problems in groundwater. We have been doing limited work in terms of nitrate contamination. And that's been funded out of the primarily out of fertilizer fees. This would supplement activity, would allow us to do additional work in terms of responding to nitrate problems in waters. And you see a five bullet points there on some potential deliverables that we're looking at. And then the last request is pesticide monitoring and assessment. You just got done hearing a lot about in terms of the proposed fee increase to pay for the fee increase in terms of the pesticide regulatory account to pay for division operations. And I know the question comes, well, is it either or? And it really is, we need both. This request primarily would allow us to purchase lab equipment that would allow us to do a considerable amount of new sampling of water. The bottleneck in terms of water monitoring right now is really lab capacity, so this is what allow us to run a lot more samples in terms of finding out where there are problems around the state.
And you've been very good with this overview, and I would ask too, like others have asked, that you expand a little bit on even the spreadsheet is very limited on it. You know, what equipment are you purchasing? What laboratories are it going to go into? Is it just for this, or is it being utilized for other things? And again, same time, I look at your full-time people. You have in the second year of the biennium, $175,000 in this in the pesticide monitoring assessment, but nothing in the first year. And then the one we just did, the drinking water protection, you've got $300,000 the first and $400,000 the second year. Again, you said it was new, and I get that, and we're doing new things, but we want to understand where the employees are coming from. Are they within your department now and being reassigned to this fund, or are they new hires that you're posting for? All that detail we want to know on these funds in particular. So if you could expand on that, and we will get that to the committee members as we move forward.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to draw more detailed proposals for each of these requests that include all that information.
Questions on clean water members or anything else we've talked about today? Representative Anderson.
I had this earlier and missed it, but the question, going back to our first presenter, and the terms used a couple of times were unused funds and funds that are carried over. And I can see that in a fund like a super fund type thing, but what's the general policy of this department or any department here at the state about unused funds in terms, at least in their operating budget, are those simply carried over, or do they start out each biennium with a fresh
person? Maybe you can answer that. Is there a different set of rules for you with general fund dollars versus ag fund, remediation funds, et cetera? What can be carried over and what drops to the bottom line if it's not used?
Yeah.
And introduce yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director for the Department of Agriculture. General fund direct appropriations do have general statutory authority to carry forward within the biennium from the first year to the second. We have haven't spent it all. Other direct appropriations sometimes have that authority in there. The Clean Water Appropriations, one of them was available to spend. And that money you see on the numbers page, you can see in the top part of the numbers page where there's $2.1 million appropriated, and then you can see in the bottom section of the page where it shows expending, where it's not.
What page are you on?
Page 31, Mr. Chairman. Where you can see that money has dragged out in its actual expenditure. It was all appropriated in that first year. You see 2254 on the top line, and then on the first line under the actual expenditures, for example, in fiscal year 10, $486,000 of that 1.253 is that available to spent money actually being planned to be spent, and $175,000 in fiscal 11. For a fund like remediation, where there's a standing statutory authority for the whole balance of the fund is appropriated jointly, actually, between three agencies, the Commissioners of Agriculture, PGA, and DNR. The authority is to each, all three of them jointly. Every year, they see how much is in the fund. We sometimes call that carry forward authority because we plan to spend it one year, but maybe the cleanup work didn't proceed on a certain site. It's actually new authority every year. If we didn't spend it, it just stayed in the fund, and then the whole balance of the fund is still appropriated to us. Similarly, with the agricultural fund, the authorities are statutory for the whole balance of the particular account. Each account has its own appropriation. So the pesticide account is appropriated for the purposes of pesticide work only. Fertilizer work, ACRA work. And then if it doesn't get spent in that year, it doesn't really carry forward. It's a whole new authority. It's just all still there to spend.
And what you'll learn, Representative Anderson, and I'm still learning, as you draft legislation, the words become very important, and Mr. Reinholdt and I know Solberg and others look at that closely as it goes through, whether you're putting it into the base, whether it is available until expended. That means it will carry over as opposed to just putting a dollar amount in and it falls away, and sometimes you wonder where did the money go. And so a lot of it is in the drafting of the language, Representative Solberg.
And if the words stay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Anderson, if available until expenditure, the legislature never sees it again. Maybe even 5 or 6 years later. So we have pretty much of a standard that says these are for the, even if it's a special revenue fund, that you have to come back to us if they don't expend it, that to come back for an appropriation, a justification for the appropriation, and not just let it sit there and all of a sudden spend it 5, 6 years later.
And if we don't catch it here, that's why we go through Ways and Means or Finance Committees, and sometimes the chairs and committee members will be asking about specific language as our finance bills travel, and make sure our intent is what we think is going on in there. So, any other questions? Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Still trying to get a handle on a few things here. On page 2 of the spreadsheet, towards the bottom, there's a
clean water.
Of the clean water.
Yep.
There is aids and grants to counties, $200,000 in 2011 only. And I'm puzzled as to where that's coming from and where it's going, or why it's going. If you could expand on that a little bit.
Mr. Chair, at the end of your pesticide monitoring and assessment, you have grants to counties, $200,000 second year. Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, the thought on that proposal would be that for those communities that are experiencing nitrate problems in their drinking water, that perhaps we, as a department, could do a direct grant to the communities to help facilitate problem solving on whether working with fertilizer dealers, farmers, and water planners. As we know, all these things take money when you need to bring people together, a community to solve a problem. Representative
Polk. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question out of curiosity. See that the full-time equivalent, I mean, there is a significant cost there, but what kind of is the average pay of a Department of Agriculture employee? Do you have a standard number or an average number?
Is it more than a legislator?
Yes.
Chairman. Sure.
Representative, I don't have a standard number off the top of my head. It really depends whether it's a more skilled position. Some of the pesticide work probably needs to be a more skilled position. I think Mr. Suzuki referenced about $100,000 when you add in all the fringe costs. That's about 25%.
What would be the salary of a starting ag inspector out there in the country, driving through the countryside, answering calls in Mr. Bozicki's division? What would you post that job as? That'd be a good entry-level job for an agronomy major coming out of college.
Mr. Chair, members, I showed some numbers the other last week, and the salary and fringe totally we attract, and all of that, our average employee in the division was $74,000 in 2007. Mr. Ernest is correct. If we actually look at rent, computer, travel, you know, all those other things, personally, a rule of thumb is a little bit less than $100,000 for the average.
How much are the
employee
salary?
For the actual salary, Mr. Chair, I would. We'd be looking at a degree candidate who's got some experience coming in to do a difficult job. You're probably talking about in the mid-40s.
Okay. Starting level. And up from there. Any other questions? What are we doing next week, Mr. Doerr? Use your microphone.
Next week, starting on Tuesday, Department of Ag is going to be coming back in, and we're going to start with the marketing division, and after that go to plant protection, and on Wednesday the department's coming back in, Veterans Affairs Department's coming back in with their Hastings and Minneapolis Vets Homes, and after that we'll get into their programs and services division again.
Very good. Any other questions or business for the committee? Seeing none.
I may have gotten that wrong. Maybe calling me.
Oh, well, if you want to get on the tape today, introduce yourself and welcome.
Mr. Chair, Quinn Cheney with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. What the department will bring forward the marketing division, and we will also discuss ethanol producer payments and the new Ag 21 proposal next week.
Very good. We're going to get into ethanol. Members, we are adjourned.